We're on a mission from God.
And now for something completely different.
This is Pastor Jolly John Lukumsky. I've moved, Matt. I'm up in Northfield, Minnesota now for the hot summer. How are you enjoying it down there in the St. Louis area, Matt? What is it, 95 yet? Got to 100 yet?
Thanks for rubbing it in, John. Yeah, I'm Pastor Matt Youngblood Clark, stuck here in hot and humid St. Louis, Missouri, serving as pastor at Ascension Lutheran Church. And, we're recording this ahead of time, right, in advance. And right now, John, to be honest, it's mostly sunny and 79 degrees. So it's not that bad. However, when this airs, I'm sure it's going to be sweltering and the heat index well above 100 degrees. I have no doubt about that. Thanks for bringing that up, John.
And the irony is, on this day at the end of May that we're recording, it's actually warmer up here. We're in the mid-80s. I know.
Oh,
that
my
too.
Goodness.
So I don't know how that can be, but it is for the time being. Periodically on this show, we like to give people evidence that the world is coming to an end. signs of the Armageddon. So if you don't mind, just briefly, I'd like to point one of those out that I just encountered. Now, if I'd seen this on some site on the web, this wouldn't surprise me because there's all kinds of weird stuff on the web. In fact, if I had been going into some cheap discount store, I wouldn't have been surprised at this either, you know. But I was in Target. And
okay.
Right there at the where they got the big dog, you know, when you come in, they got all this stuff there with the big dog and his tail's wagging. And what they had there for sale, right there as you're coming in the door, is the toilet, the toilet hockey game. And I'm thinking, what? Yes. So you can sit on the toilet and you can practice your hockey. Your hockey, what is it, shots? What are they doing, hockey? I guess it's shots.
Like a slap shot or,
yeah, there you go. Yeah. And so I did a little more research, and apparently you can also practice your golf. There's a toilet golf thing. You're hunting. There's a toilet hunting thing. And fishing, and it raises the question, where are you fishing and what are you fishing for?
That can be dangerous.
In the bathroom. Yeah. So I think really, this is what our world has come to now. People have to have something to play while they're in the bathroom.
but hunting, fishing, those are kind of, you know, solo activities. You know, I'm thinking, you know, hockey's kind of a group sport. So how do you do that in the bathroom?
This is what's scaring me, because what happens if this toilet hockey becomes really popular, like pickleball has become, and we start having leagues.
Toilet hockey
league. That's one game I'm not going to, okay? Anyway.
Signs of the end.
Yep. But so it's their Target if you want to rush down to your local Target to get your hockey, toilet hockey set. So, all right, enough of that. It just tickled me. I think, what? Okay. All right. Although I've been using it, it's actually rather fun. I'm getting pretty good. Gotta snap that wrist, get it through the goal. The family's outside the door knocking. Grandpa, get out of the bathroom.
It's only the second period, kids. You got one more period.
That's right. All right. Well, thank heavens we have something better than that to talk about. So, Matt, the Lord's half of the year is over, right? We're done with Pentecost, the Trinity. Yeah. We're going to do Trinity Sunday, and so what will happen now for those who are following the 3-year lectionary, which I think the majority of churches follow this 3-year lectionary, and it is the year of Matthew. And basically, that's what we'll be doing, isn't it, for most churches? We'll just be reading chapter by chapter, verse by verse through the Gospel of Matthew. And I thought it would be fun then here on Wrestling with the Basics, we would start with a show about Matthew. Is that okay?
Yeah, sounds good. So, yeah, okay. So the part of the church here has all the big stuff, right, John? At least it feels like you're right. It's got, you know, your Advent and your Christmas and Epiphany. And then you have, of course, Lent.
Don't forget Lent,
Holy Week and Friday, Easter Sunday, all those wonderful things. And then we just wrapped up with things like Ascension Day. Don't forget that. The Day of Pentecost. And then Holy Trinity Sunday. But now, like you said, now we're in what they call the time of the church sometimes. Yeah. All of these Sundays after Pentecost, and no less important, but a time where we focus on the God's work in the lives of his people and the work of the church in among each other, in our community, in our world.
Yeah, sometimes it's called the Green Pasture Sundays because the color will be green. Mm-hmm. And I like that kind of image. We're just a bunch of sheep. We're just going to do some grazing. We're going to take in the word of God and just enjoy the strength that gives us for our day-to-day life and for our love for one another. And this happens to be the year that we'll be hearing a lot from Matthew. So if you don't mind, Matt, would you read Matthew? Okay, that seems appropriate. Chapter 9 is where Matthew gets his official calling. And if you could just read, I guess just read Matthew 9, verse 9.
Okay. As Jesus passed on from there, he saw a man called Matthew sitting at a tax booth. And he said to him, "Follow me." And he rose and followed him.
Okay. So tell us, what do you think is significant about Matthew? When you think of Matthew, what are the kind of things that come to your mind, Matt?
Well, I mean, the verse we just read, I think just the simplest.
Oh, by the way, it's your name, isn't it?
It is. So I think he's a pretty great guy, John.
Yeah, slow on the uptake here. I'm sorry.
Much better than that fourth gospel writer, John, right? No.
That's right. We're your two gospel guys right here, Matthew and John.
So a couple things here. I mean, I think it's pretty revealing in this first verse that we just read that he's sitting in the tax booth. That means he's a tax collector, right?
Yeah.
So he is, he's not a popular guy among the Jews, this Matthew. So he is a tax collector who is probably, and I think probably safely could say, he's taking more than what he really should at times. He's certainly working for the Roman government and in a way looked upon as someone who's betraying his own people, the Jews. So, you know, Matthew's not a popular guy. He's not probably not the type of guy that we would want to necessarily be associated with or to have as our follower or protege. And yet Jesus calls him. And the other thing that's interesting about Matthew, I think, is just as you read through his gospel, we see all of these references to the Old Testament, right?
Oh, yeah.
More than any of the other gospels. So again and again and again, goes back and writes about how Jesus is the fulfillment of those Old Testament prophecies. He is the Christ. He's the one they've been looking for, which I think is kind of interesting, you know, considering, you know, he's kind of a betrayer of the Jewish people as a tax collector. And yet his gospel is written, it seems like, primarily to the Jewish people. I don't know. Is he trying to make it up to them or something, John? You know, sorry about taking your money, guys. Here, I'll give you this gospel. But he really... perhaps his main audience, as he writes, is the Jewish people. And again, pointing back to the Old Testament scriptures.
Yeah, Dr. David Scare, a professor, I think he's still teaching there at the Concordia Seminary in Fort Wayne. That was always his point, that he really thought that this was a gospel written to the Jews. Matthew, of course, is a Jew himself. Mm-hmm. And it's just filled with constant Old Testament reference. This was to fulfill what was written in Isaiah or wherever. And so I think you're right. And I think maybe that he felt that was his mission to go back to his own people. The thing that's interesting is I learned something about the tax collector that I had never realized before, because I've kind of always pictured it as kind of what you alluded, that he gets paid, you know, the Romans hire him to collect taxes. And in fact, what the system was, they're actually literally tax farmers more than tax collectors, because the idea is you would go into an area and you would contract with the Romans to take a... All right, well, just Nazareth, say Nazareth. Now you'll notice as we read on, there were many tax collectors there. So this is probably a corporate thing. Probably a bunch of them got together. But basically, they would go to the Romans and say, here's the money for the taxes that you will collect in Nazareth. So they put the money up front. And the government loved that because the government had the money then. They had the money to operate with. They didn't have to wait for money to be collected. And they didn't have to pay people. But then that gave you the right to farm that area, to farm Nazareth as a tax collector. So you could go around to all these people and say, now you got to pay this money to me because I already paid it for you to the government. Which I suppose if you were a tax collector, you'd say, well, that's why I got to charge a little more, right? Because I got to pay for my own expenses. Mm-hmm. Plus, if someone is found to defraud, in other words, they didn't really report everything that they needed to report to the government, if there's some, well, then I'm going to be responsible for that because Rome still wanted paid even though you didn't pay it. So now I really have to kind of pay myself by gaining a little more, all right? So it's the way we all do it, though. We all justify the wrong we do. There's a we're just not bad people, you know. Like I said, I've already put out this money, so I just have to kind of protect myself. But certainly, as you pointed out, that was not the view of the common people. Certainly not the view of the religious people of the day. What I also didn't know is that the rabbis had books that listed what you needed to do if you had committed a sin. And in those books, tax collectors were with thieves and robbers. Mm. As you go through it, yeah, that's where you'll find tax collectors along with the thieves and robbers. One other oddity that you remember Zacchaeus, right? Another tax collector.
Yep.
And of course, he boasted how I think he was going to pay back five times whatever he had cheated people and give half of his money to the poor, which I always thought, well, that's pretty impressive. But actually, that's just what the law required. That's what, if he was going to show he was truly repentant, that, so he wasn't actually doing anything more than what the law said he had to do, which is why I think Jesus' response to that isn't, wow, that's really cool of you to do that, Zacchaeus. But he said, you know, maybe the key thing is that salvation has come to your home today.
Yeah.
I'm not denying that what you're doing is a good thing, but you're still thinking in terms of, I have to do something to make it right, whereas no, Jesus has done everything to make it right. Now, out of Jesus' love, we respond with the same kind of love. Anyway, those are some things I learned about tax collectors.
Yeah, that's good, John. As you share that, it seems to me they probably were relatively wealthy, right?
They had to be
able to make that initial payment to the Roman government, and then people pay them back. They had to have the money to put up front, right? So, you know how people feel about the wealthy sometimes, you know, they have it out for them. And so maybe all the more reason people may have been jealous or didn't like Matthew and other tax collectors. One, they're pretty well off. And then two, they're kind of the middleman then between them and the Roman government.
And well, the other thing to remember is that people weren't really wealthy. They didn't have a lot of wealth. So if you've got that kind of money to put it up front, it makes you wonder where you got that money from, right? Mm-hmm. That probably wasn't legitimate either, you know, because most people are just raising sheep and growing crops and no one's getting to be. Although Elon, we love you, Elon, by the way. If you'd like to do something for our show, we'd be more than willing to take that. we don't mind groveling to rich people.
especially for a Jew in the Roman world, there's probably not a whole lot of ultra wealthy Jews, right?
No. And yet, ironically, unless you're a priest or a high priest or a Pharisee, because somehow but then again, you're cheating widows and all those other things that Jesus accuses them of. Mm-hmm. But of course, no, we don't want to talk about that. That's not a problem. Because I'm sure they had a legitimate reason for what they were doing. The other thing here, too, that's interesting is he doesn't deny any of it, does it? That's what really impressed me about this text, that he comes out right. In fact, what's neat is when he lists the disciples, Matt, he says, Matthew, the tax collector.
Yeah.
You know? He doesn't say that. He doesn't say Peter the fisherman or anything like that. In fact, he's the only one that he qualifies in the list. But yeah, I am the tax collector, which I think is neat, because even though he had been called here from the tax booth, so I think we can conclude from here on he's not doing that anymore, and yet he still sees himself as a sinner, which I think is the important point.
Yeah. And I think, you know, if he is looked down upon by other Jews and, you know, kind of an outcast from his own community, and you even wonder how highly the Romans even thought of this guy. You know, they probably didn't have a lot of respect for him either, you know. So you're kind of just this outcast, more or less, but especially among your own people. And then for Jesus to come specifically to him and say, follow me, you know, wow. You know, he wants me to follow him, me of all people.
And thank you for, because we really need to emphasize that too. It wasn't just that they were known to be cheats and robbers, and there probably were some maybe tax collectors who tried to be fair. But again, like you said, the fact that they were working for the Romans and the fact that they had to deal with Gentiles. Mm-hmm. See, as a Jew, you tried to avoid any contact with Gentiles. But if you're a tax collector, the Romans don't want you to just text from your own tribe, from your own group. You got to collect taxes from everybody, which meant your very daily business was dealing with people that were, you know, unclean. Although, as I was reading about these Jewish regulations, they considered shepherds that way too. And I thought, well, isn't that interesting that they are also kind of considered unclean people? Mm-hmm. But that's a story for another day. So you want to go ahead and read, let's read the rest of this, verse 10 through 13.
Okay. And as Jesus reclined at table in the house, behold, many tax collectors and sinners came and were reclining with Jesus and his disciples. And when the Pharisees saw this, they said to his disciples, why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners? But when he heard it, Jesus said, those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice, for I came not to call the righteous, but sinners.
All right. Any comments about that, Matt? What thoughts?
Well, I mean, it's kind of shocking, right? I think but, you know, I wonder what the disciples thought, first of all, that where are we going? Whose house are we going to?
Exactly.
Matthew? I don't know. Do I want to go to Matthew's house? Who are these tax collectors showing up and sinners? Jesus, should we really be here? You know, we don't have all the insight into that, but you do kind of wonder what the fellow disciples thought. And then the Pharisees, you know, they stick their nose into their business here. And this criticism here. And I think it's interesting. They don't talk to Jesus directly.
Yeah,
isn't that interesting?
Yeah,
you know, they go up to his disciples. You know, what's going on here? Why is your teacher? Why is Jesus eating with tax collectors and sinners, right? But then Jesus apparently overhears it. And then he gives this whole thing, you know, those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. And, you know, and we think, well, all of us are sick, right, John? Right. We all need a physician.
Yeah.
Sick with sin. For those, it's for those who realize it, right? Those who are convicted by the law, those who know they need someone outside of them to bring about healing, and the physicians, the Pharisees don't seem to realize that they even need healing.
So, you know, the thing that struck me, that statement about, I came not to call the righteous, but sinners.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. There is no righteous, right? In fact, that's what the Bible says. No man is righteous. No, not one.
Yeah.
So we're all sinners. We're all jumped in. But obviously, the Pharisees. And like I said, I think you're right. I think the disciples are maybe just a little uncomfortable with this, too. That's what I always figured. The chosen. Have you watched that show at all on TV?
I've seen episodes, yeah. John. Yeah, yeah.
And you, in that show, the disciples are a little bit uncomfortable with Matthew, although the longer they're together, the more comfortable they get with him as they realize that they're all sinners and they're all being accepted by Jesus Christ. So what struck me as interesting, though, it would take this a little different tack, is because I thought, well, I'm going to learn all about Matthew. Matthew's going to tell me all about his background. And Matthew really doesn't tell us anything about himself, does he?
Very little.
In fact, here, I'll ask this question, because I don't know that I know a real answer. Everyone else calls him Levi, right? Mark and Luke, mm-hmm. when they tell this same story about this man who is called to follow Jesus, they use the name Levi. They don't use the name Matthew. You got any insights into that? You ever try to figure that out, Matt?
Yeah, just, I don't know if a big significant John, just another name for Matthew.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that's that is interesting, you know, and why does Matthew not call himself that, right? He calls himself Matthew.
Well, and I mean, again, I went to Claude. Yeah, Claude can be helpful. He really can. I can tell you some stories about Claude, though, but we won't embarrass him on air. But he pointed out that it wasn't uncommon for people to have multiple names. In fact, in my family, I actually had two names. When I was hanging around with my grandmother's side, I was always John Paul. And when I would hang around my dad's side of the family, I was John Andrew. And I found out later that's because Paul was the grandpa on my mom's side, and Andrew was the grandpa on my dad's side. So that's how I got called. We got Simon, Peter. Of course, we got Saul, Paul, that we talked about last week. What's your middle name, by the way, Matt?
Yeah, Jonathan.
Yeah, really? Yep. So you're a John. Oh,
so I've got a John in there, too. Yep.
Well, see, now, how about that? So you've got two of the apostles. I was John, Paul, Andrew. So I had three of them, or the Beatles, or the whichever way you wanted to do it. So that's what Claude pointed out. My own thought is that, you know, Luke acknowledges that he's just getting information from other people. We're not quite sure where Mark fits in. But I think that's why Matt says, you know, you've probably heard about this guy Levi. Well, that was me, in case you were wondering. Because it is interesting that in Mark and Luke, when they have the list of the apostles, they say the name Matthew. So all I can conclude is they didn't have enough information to know that this was still the same story. Well, whatever. Those are the kind of things that remind me that the Bible is true. It's not somebody that made, because if it was made up, you wouldn't have those kind of questions. So here's the thing that struck me, though. We don't really know a lot of the detail about Matthew, although I think what you said earlier, that he's a Jew and he's writing a Jew. You can see that evidence. But what struck me is the two things we do know about him is, one, he is a sinner. And if you didn't know that about being a tax collector, he really emphasizes that, doesn't he? Many tax collectors and sinners, right?
Yeah,
that's what a tax collector is. In fact, it's interesting. Matthew is the one that tells us that Jesus says, well, if you do good to the people who do good to you, even tax collectors and sinners do that. So, see, again, there, he really emphasizes, like, look, I'm not denying, I didn't do what I was supposed to be doing. And yet, he is one, as you pointed out earlier, that has been called by Jesus Christ. And what I love about this text is Jesus didn't wait until he'd left the tax booth, right? Like Zacchaeus, right? Zacchaeus comes looking for Jesus, climbs up a tree. Now, Jesus doesn't wait for that. He goes right to him, right there where he's doing the sinful thing. And there's no period of checking him out, right? Well, we'll keep you on temporarily. We'll see how it works out. But nope, you're a full disciple. In fact, the really great thing is I'm going to recline at table with you, which, of course, in the Jewish culture was the ultimate act of family, of friendship, of fellowship. This isn't just, they were just eating and drinking. That's the language the Pharisees used. But this was reclining at table, which is, like I said, it's the ultimate act of fellowship. And still to this day, right? The people that you invite into your house, that you sit around your table, those are the people that you count your family and your friends.
Yeah, definitely, John. And I love that point that Jesus goes to the tax booth, comes to Matthew, seeks him out. And, you know, and I wonder if there's a lesson for the church today, too, in that, right?
Yeah.
The tax collectors and sinners of the world today, you know, they know where our church is if they want to find us. we're right here at, our church is at the corner of Donovan and Eichelberger. They know where to come. But now that's not what Jesus is doing. No, Jesus goes out to them. You know, he's seeking out Matthew. He's seeking and saving the lost. That's his whole ministry. And I think that's a beautiful example. And, you know, maybe we do that too, right? You know, among the tax collectors, the sinners, the people that don't seem quite healthy, right, or quite holy, but still to seek them out and seek them out the same one who sought Matthew out with Jesus.
And the thing that strikes me about this is Matthew, there's only two things Matthew wants us to know. One, he is a sinner. And two, that Jesus Christ loved him. And not only called him, but sat down and ate with him, reclined at table with him. And it occurs to me, that's the only two things we really need to know about ourselves, too. Although as a pastor, it's really hard to get people to know that they're sinners. I guess we're afraid we're going to have the reaction that we had last week with Stephen. You know, you preach the law, and people do. They can get cranky sometimes, especially when they think you're talking about them, which, of course, we are. If there's any sinners listening to us right now, we're talking about you, okay? But don't you find that difficult to preach the law so that people really are convicted and understand that they really are sinners? It's not just something we say at the beginning of a church service. I know I wrestle with it, like I said last week, with my doubts. Man, I'd love to be free of my doubts, but I can't. I don't know. Any thoughts about that, Matt?
Well, I mean, I think in this text in Matthew, what I think is what's interesting, what's recorded isn't really a word of law to Matthew and the tax collectors and sinners. Jesus does speak a word of law to the Pharisees, though.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I think that's kind of interesting. So again, just the emphasis, like you said, that all sinners need to hear the law, right? Us pastors included. But yeah, I think, again, you know, There's some things that are worth offending people over, and other things that aren't worth offending people over, and to share a word of law, a true word of law, well, maybe that is worth offending people if that's the case, because without that word of law, without that conviction, you know, the gospel's pretty meaningless, right? We need that word of law. So yeah, whether pastors, parents, grandparents, a friend, you know, we don't want to do it with a holier than thou attitude, but when we share the law. Out of love, right?
Yeah,
and in humility, you know, that's a good thing to do. That's a loving thing to do. And someone's reaction to that is, well, that's out of my hands, right? Yeah.
Well, and so whenever I deal with a gospel lesson, the question I always ask myself is, where am I at? Where does this talk about me?
Yeah.
And I would have to confess, I suppose it is the Pharisees.
Yeah.
Because I'm sorry. But darn it, I do think I'm better than most people. I've been a pastor for my whole life, you know. And I wonder if that isn't a thing we all struggle with as Christians. Well, you know, I'm in church on Sunday. You know, surely it must be a little bit better than those lazy bums that don't even take time to go to worship. But that, I guess, that is what we need to confess. That
exactly.
So often we do say, well, thank God I'm not like those people. Well, yeah, I'll tell you who you're like. You're like the Pharisees. And that's a dangerous position to be in. Although I think probably, I hope and pray most of our listeners, most of our church members say, yeah, you're probably right, Pastor. We're that, and we're all kinds of other things. We've lusted. We've been angry. Again, things that Matthew lists for us in the Sermon on the Mount, because I think Matthew wants us to know we're all sinners, just so we can understand what you pointed out. That's why Christ came. We're the people he came for, and we're the people he's going to heal. In fact, he has healed, and he's done it through the word that calls us from our baptism on, and also then through the meal that we will sit and recline with him at table. And what a meal it is, the body and blood given and shed for us for the forgiveness of sins. Matt, thank you for my opportunity to share about Matthew. This has been Wrestling with the Basics.
Showing support for KFUO is now easier than ever. You can sport a KFUO shirt, swag, or even socks by visiting our online store. Go to KFUO.org/store and order high-quality KFUO-branded merch. You no longer need to wait for our annual share-a-thon for a chance to show your KFUO spirit. Visually share and wear this ministry out in the world by checking out our selection. Every purchase helps to support our proclamation of Christ for you, anytime, anywhere. Go to KFUO.org/store.